Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
The Mid-Morning Show is proudly sponsored by PC Consultants, the island's leading provider of IT service, consultancy and support to businesses, public sector and private clients across the island. Call us at PC Consultants on 01983 811 711 to find out more about our award-winning service.
Joe, I've got to be honest, that was out 25 years ago and it was all about the Euros, in which Gareth Southgate missed a penalty and we got knocked out by the Germans. And I thought, well, we dig that out and play that again, because obviously we're going through the Euros right now. And obviously we're in this together is maybe a motto that we ought to draw from that when it comes down to the next 4 years, when putting things in place for, you know, council staff and people of the Isle of Wight. What do you think, Debbie Andre?
Well, hello, everybody. Really, really glad to be here. Yes, we've got some real challenges. I don't think anybody would deny that over the next 4 years. But we've also got some real opportunities. And even in the last 4 weeks, we've been putting changes into place to get those opportunities up and running.
And we are.
For our island.
We are in this together. And we're all pulling together.
Absolutely. One of the things that we've pledged is that we will be both inclusive and transparent. And that means being a listening council. And to me, especially with my portfolio of children's services, education and adult education skills, that's really important that we actually listen to people, to real lived experiences. And what people actually need. It's about what people need. And we need to be on the pulse. And the only way that we can do that is by actually listening to people and what they are telling us.
Okay. Look, we've got our best part of an hour. Okay. And we're going to find out a lot more about you. We're going to find out a lot more about what we're going to do in the next 4 years, how we can help and so on. But first of all, I'm just going to chuck this at you. And now, I don't work with a script. I never write anything down unless, you know, the old mind goes, I haven't had enough sleep the night before. And I think I better write that down just in case I forget. But I don't work with a script or anything. So this is just going to be random. But I just thought now is a perfect time to sort of bring it up, deal with it, move on. And that is, can you pay tribute to Paul Braden with what he did in the last 4 years? Can we say what a great job he did?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, I've hit the ground running and there are particular issues, but I would like to pay tribute to Paul. He was very passionate and he dedicated himself to improving the lives of children on this island. I think as well, it would be very remiss of me if I didn't thank officers as well, because it's very difficult in a way for officers, yeah, because they are the constant. But of course, every 4 years, there's the potential that they will have to start working with somebody who may have very different ideas and give a different political perspective on things. Having said that, I think most people will agree that it's actually good to have a fresh pair of eyes, somebody new coming in. But I think it's absolutely fair to say that we have come a very long way since 2013, when our children's services were actually graded inadequate. We've come a very long way. But that's never down to one person, of course. But I'm well aware in my role that the political direction is crucial, and it's crucial that we work collectively with officers. You started off by saying we're all in it together. Mm. Very much so. It's a team effort. Really is a team effort.
Excellent. Great to hear. It's nice to hear as well, because at the end of the day, we all want the same thing. We might have different shirts on, but we do all want the same thing. And now we've got to look forward. Now we've got to say, right, OK, how do we fix this? But before we do that, I want to find out a little bit more about you. So that everybody else knows, you know, there you go, Debbie Andre, she's got voted in. Is this the second time you've been a councillor?
This is my second term, yes. Okay. I've already been a councillor for 4 fantastic years. It's one of those things that I think often happens. If you'd have said to me about, you know, 8 years ago, this is what you'll be doing, I'd have said, you've got to be kidding me.
What made you get into it in the first place then?
What made me get into it was living in Sandown, a place that I have chosen to live. I'll readily admit I wasn't born on the island. I know.
Neither was I.
Well, we have that in common.
I wasn't even born in this country, so, you know, but there you go.
We won't hold that against you. But having lived in Sandown at that point for about 7 years, yeah, and not seeing any real improvement or change made me think about things a bit differently. And I suppose maybe I was at a point in my life where I was looking for more challenges. But I have to say, it was actually my vicar who planted a mustard seed, because he doesn't even remember it now, and he's moved on to a different post off island since. And he said, wouldn't it be lovely if one day one of our congregation was a member of the council? And do you know, if you'd have said it would be me,
wow,
I'd have never have believed it.
You are that mustard seed.
I am that mustard seed indeed. So that's how I sort of came into it. But I would recommend to anybody, I started off in 2014 for the 2017 elections, and I started going to town council meetings.
Right.
From that, I started going to county council meetings and full council. And then there were various initiatives and events that came forward. And at the time, I suppose I was quite fortunate, because I came in on very much a wave, which is still continuing, of getting more women into all levels of government. There were events called Be a Councillor, and there was the 50-50 Parliament project, which has now turned into the Elect Her project. And I sort of came in on that wave. But I have to say, I was so well supported by the wonderful people that I'm actually working with now, and I'm brilliant. Sure we'll touch on my cabinet colleagues later. No,
it's great, and I think I'm glad that we've got more ladies, working within the council and being councillors and politics as well. Because I'm a great believer. I look at the common sense aspect, and I think if you go to most houses, and I've said this so many times, most houses will be a lady in the house will be holding the purse strings.
Absolutely.
But we've never had a female chancellor. No. And you just think, come on, it's common sense we have a female chancellor, isn't it?
I would, as you can imagine, I would very, very much support that. But I would just say, it's not about gender. It's not about whether you're male or female. It's about having the right people with the right skills in the right place.
Give a lady a chance running the money. That's what I say. I think you've got to give it a go, as far as I'm concerned.
If they've got the right skills, and as we've seen,
well,
actually.
Have. We know they have. We know they have. I mean, my wife holds the purse strings. She tells me what I can buy, and I go and buy double whatever it is she says. I just think that there's a massive thing here that we're missing. We've never had a female chancellor. It's about time. You know, we've got a female Doctor Who.
Yeah, true.
You know, it's about time we sort of put these things in place. What is your main background? What did you do for a living before, you got into, being a counsellor then?
My most recent background actually was a guardian for international students.
Oh, wow.
Which does place me very well in the role that I'm in now. I worked for a wonderful company that brought students over. So I worked very closely with Island Schools, very much with the sixth forms. I actually hosted teenagers myself willingly in my house, which with its various challenges. So I do have an understanding. I've got two very lovely grown-up children myself. And I also recruited host families, which is very much in alignment, of course, with our fostering, our adoption programmes, and also the safeguarding aspect of my role, which I'm sure we'll come on to later, which is a very, very big part of my role. So my background, I know it sounds a bit cheesy, but I really do feel as if the experience that I've had has been leading
brilliant
up to this point.
So, are we talking, is it European Friendship, EF students, or something
yes,
similar?
Yes, there was a name, the Erasmus programme, which we're very much hoping that something either similar or comparable will be put in its place post-Brexit. But they were mostly German students. And in fact, our very own Isle of Wight College on the island has an international department. And I actually previously worked with the international department of the Isle of Wight College.
How do we compare with, you know, with what and how they do things in schools to what we down what and how we do things here? I mean, is there something that we can look at and think, well, do you know what, they're doing this, this and this is much better than what we're doing over, so we're going to start implementing this? Is that the case?
That's a very interesting question, because there are lots of common misconceptions about other European countries being better, not just in terms of education, but in so many other ways. So to actually have German students living with you on a day-to-day basis and having the opportunity to meet parents puts a much, much better perspective on it. One thing, certainly for sure, we are one of the few countries in Europe that actually insists on a school uniform. And as some people will already know, the government are actually bringing forward a paper, although I have spoken to Bob Seeley about this, to try and bring things forward, because at the moment it's due to come out with guidance in September to relax the rules on uniform. But of course, a lot of families are really suffering with the financial effects of the pandemic. They're going to need to buy uniform from now on through the holidays. So having guidance in September, so we're trying to sort of bring that forward, about not having to go to a specific supplier, which is often a very expensive option. I remember when my youngest started at Christ the King, and there's one supplier for them, and they were very good. They did a package for beginners. But at the time, and this is a few years ago, you were still talking something in the region of £200. Now, you multiply that by the number of children in a family. Okay, they're all not going to have, you know, all the same uniform, all uniform at the time. But we know that children often have growth spurts in the summer holidays. And that's a real issue. So we're trying to get a more relaxed attitude. But as I say, a lot of schools in Europe don't actually have a uniform.
Right. What would that be then? Because I'm a believer of, I mean, I can talk of my experiences. I went to Downside and it was fairly relaxed. We're talking hundreds of years ago, though. I mean, it was fairly relaxed. If you wore something along the lines of black trousers and a blue jumper, and that was fine. Okay, and then when we went to Medina, we had that same issue, and that same one shop that you can get all your ties from, your badge for your blazer and so on. You had to have a blazer, you had to have the same colored shirt, you had to do this, and it was such a pain, but it was expensive, and I couldn't get my head round, and I still can't get my head round it now. Why is it we couldn't have just had something slightly smarter, if you like, you know, a jumper, a shirt, a pair of trousers that are black? Why does it always have to be the same? I get that, yeah, we're in uniform, but at the same time, I'm going back to, and I'm going to just kind of pluck a name out of the air. There was a guy called Stephen Cass, and he was obviously, his mum and dad were, go back in time. This was the terms they used to use, on the dole. Didn't have the money, couldn't afford it. He didn't get his blazer until, I don't know, the third term. And when he got it, it was a big thing, and no one poked fun at him. No one put, you know, they said how lucky he was because he didn't have to wear a blimmin' blazer. But do you think that we can alleviate those things of, you know, finances and so on by saying, right, you don't need a blazer, just a jumper will do. And as long as it's got to be a black one, it's a black one. If it's in a grey one, it's a grey one. That's fine. That would surely alleviate some of the financial problems. Or do you think we should wear a full on kit to school with everything, all bells and whistles?
Okay, well, I think we've been set a very good model here. If you look at organisations like the Brownies, the Scouts, the Guides, for quite some time now, they've gone away from the formal shirt, skirt, you know, the sort of more structured uniform. I think it's fair to say that, you know, over the last sort of 20 years, fabric technology, textiles, has changed massively. So I think the materials that are available now are very different. And I'm not saying that we should get away from a uniform completely, but I very much welcome this briefing paper that actually gives more choice to parents, so that perhaps what we need to do is be looking at materials that, for example, are easier to wash. that you don't have to iron. I mean, let's face it, anything that we don't have to iron is always welcome, especially in my house. Ironing is not my favourite task. So I think there is perhaps some sort of middle ground. I also think that mental health and well-being has really come to the fore, as we know, through... it was always something that we needed to be very mindful of, but certainly after the pandemic, that's become even more important. And I think that actually follows through to if kids are actually wearing clothes that are more comfortable, that are sort of more relaxed, rather than, you know, a buttoned-up shirt that's perhaps, you know, a bit too tight, then I think that that's a really positive thing.
Okay. So I mean, you know, what can you actually do about that, though? I know you're talking with Bob and so on, and instantly something popped into my head then. When last time Bob was in here, he came in and, he was on the campaign trail for the previous election. He came in and he had open-neck shirt, jeans, and all the kids were wearing their school uniform. And you just think, well, hang on a minute. You know, it's at some point you're setting an example. And the example is what? And I'm not having to go in for wearing jeans because I'm sat here in a pair of shorts today, jean shorts. And I'm saying if you... Same thing as what you're saying, really. If you feel comfortable, you're going to get more out of you. I totally get that people need to look similar or the same if necessary, but at what cost? I mean, I say, if you've got to wear a blazer and a tie done up, and I mean, I know that when I was at school and talking to young people now, they look at you as when you say, when they come in and they're all their ties and they've got their blazer, and I say, look, lads, you can take your blazers off if you don't. And they first, the blazer comes off because you feel, you know that they're hot for one. And two, it's like they feel uncomfortable wearing it. Yeah. And I just think, okay, we get the best out of people if they feel comfortable. I'm not saying people should go in jeans. Scruffy jeans with holes in and scruffy old T-shirts with Sex Pistols on the front and so on. But there ought to be something there that is, I don't know, it makes them similar, not the same, but similar and good enough. They, you know, without it being too expensive and too, oh, you haven't got the blazer. All right, you're struggling for cash then, are you? All right, okay, so your mum's on the soch. That's how it used to be when I was at school, and I'd hate for any child to go through that now because they couldn't afford something.
Absolutely. On that note, every school has a school uniform policy. So this is the way that we can actually effect change. So working with the schools and the government so that we enable schools to set their policy. I think there is something about a uniform which helps to engender that sense of belonging, that sense of pride. And absolutely, we don't want to take that away from students. We still want them to have, for want of a better word, and I don't really like using this, but a corporate image. But I think schools now have been working very, very hard to get their sort of mission statements to instill that sense of pride and aspiration into the pupils. And I think uniform, to an extent, does play a part in this. And we wouldn't want to do away with that completely. But the way that we can effect change is through the school's own uniform policy backed up by changes in government that allow more flexibility. And that's what we're looking for, more flexibility. Because at the end of the day, we need to be working very closely, as I say, with the schools to get the right messages through. And uniform is one way of doing that.
Okay, excellent. Well, you'll come back at some point and you'll let us know how that's going. I'm just going to chuck this at you and see what your thoughts are on this. Very recently, we had two young lads in, and they were from Medina College. And they came in a week before half term, and they said, we're leaving school this week, so we won't be... we won't be back in anymore, thanks for what you've done, and so on. And I said, hang on a minute, you're only 16, what's happening? And they said, oh, well, we're off to college. So we're off to college, and one of them was off to college, and one of them was staying on in sixth form at Medina. That's what he said. And I said, so what's happening now then? Well, we have 3 months off. We got 12 weeks off. We don't have to go back to school until September. And I look at that and I think, hang on a minute, regardless of what's just happened with pandemic and looking after people's you know, minds and so on and so forth, is that healthy for you to just have 3 months off? You know, 6 weeks is enough, surely, but 3 months. And okay, the one excuse was the fact that this kid was going to start at the Isle of Wight College. Okay, but one person, the one of the kids, was actually going to stay on at the same school, but he had 3 months off. How is that going to help anybody?
Right. Well, that's a very interesting one, because that's a specific case, really. For year 11s, when they historically and traditionally, of course, they do their exams. If they're not staying on, normally what would happen is if they were staying on to a sixth form, they would start their sixth form programme in that period between taking their GCSEs and then the actual term finishing. But obviously, with the pandemic, things have been a bit different. But having said that, there are lots of opportunities. There are things that they can do. One of the things that we've been working with, and I'm looking at very closely, is career opportunities. And one of the things that's coming out is, whilst you don't want to be pigeonholing students, and you don't want to be putting pressure on them to make their choices too soon, there is a benefit in just sort of gently, even at primary age, it's about focusing on their skills. So I know, and I'm sure you did, Ian, when you were younger, if you found yourself in a situation with that time, I would seek temporary employment. But it, And it's not always with a view to what you want to do fully, but there's a lot of talk now about transferable skills, and there are opportunities out there. We're focusing very much, and this is one of the things that we're really going to be pushing on, is apprenticeships. Now, we've heard about apprenticeships in the past, and I think it's fair to say that the programmes have basically been... they haven't had the best outcomes for those apprentices because they've done the apprenticeship programme, but then there hasn't been a job at the end of it.
No.
And there's a lot of work that's sort of going on at the moment to actually have these real apprenticeship programmes that will actually, that are targeted in areas. And this is happening across the country, but especially on the island, it's something that we're looking at. Where are those gaps? Where do we need those employers to fill those gaps? A lot of it is, I'm sure we've heard, in the hospitality industry at the moment, because of all the staff that have been on furlough, and some of them have, you know, gone off and done other things, and all of a sudden we're into the summer season, and plus the fact as well, with everybody doing staycations, there's a big need. So it's about transferable skills. It's about encouraging and inspiring our students. So don't look at it as 12 weeks off. Look at it as an opportunity to actually get some experience, because as we know...
That's good if that's what they do. But the young kid that I was talking to was very... And what are you going to do all summer long then? Nothing. That's what he said. And he was quite pleased to tell me that he was doing nothing. So it'd be interesting to see if how many of the probably hundreds of people that are in that same boat. They've got 12 weeks off now. What are you going to do? There will be some people that will probably be able to do something, work with their dads, work on their business and so on, which would be really good, which is the sort of things that we used to do. And we wouldn't be able to be doing nothing because the parents wouldn't let us. But it's so much more difficult these days, purely and simply because, you know, health and safety's gone too crazy. And, you know, you're not allowed to do this. You're not even... I mean, I was a paper boy at 11. I don't know what the age is now, but you can't deliver papers at the age of 11. I was safe. Nothing ever happened to me. I rode my bike all around Newport, delivering umpteen papers. And you just think, OK, times have changed. You've got to move on. But my first thoughts are, OK, hopefully these kids won't slip through the net and they will have 12 weeks off of doing nothing. And in this current climate, that's the worst thing that they can do, nothing. And there will be kids that will do nothing. And when they get to September, their minds will be mush and they'll have to play catch up because everyone else has got two streets ahead because they haven't been doing anything. Is that, that's a thing that's always been there? That's a, is that something that we can change in the future? Do you think that it needs to change? Because, you know, I think 3 months wasted here. Let's make sure that we've got something in place that, right, you're leaving school, you've got 12 weeks off, but you've got to do X, Y or Z, not nothing.
Okay, one thing I'd like to pick up on is parents are absolutely key in this. Now, we know that on the island we do have a lot of family businesses where kids do help out with the family businesses. But those that don't, there's still a lot of things that parents can actually do. I do agree that we need to, and I am indeed looking at the services that we provide for all youth services. So as well as the age group that you mentioned, the sort of 16 to 18s, that we do make sure. But there are things like the Duke of Edinburgh scheme,
yeah,
which is an absolutely fantastic scheme that actually operates on the island. And I would, there's lots of information about youth activities actually on the council website. So I can give some links, perhaps, if that would be helpful afterwards.
Are kids being encouraged to do that when they say, right, OK, because they all went at half term, all these young people that would have been 16, not 17 or 18, they would have been 16, and they would have been, OK, you've finished now, you don't need to go back to wherever until 12 weeks' time. Are they actually given, these are the details, these are the things that you can do, is it like putting pressure on them to do it, or is it a case of, I don't have to, so I'm not going to?
I don't think it's a case of putting pressure on, but it goes back to my earlier point that in terms of careers and activities and things that are available for them to actually build up their skills doesn't just start when they drop off or in year 11, years 10, 11. So the opportunities do come to them through that. We've got our Island Futures careers advice service, but also we do have now an Island Careers Partnership that actually brings together businesses. So there is a lot of work going on through the schools. Parents are involved in that, but at the end of the day, if someone's not motivated, then it's a really, you know, it is a really challenging one. But one would hope that, I think that is the minority. We have some fantastic kids on the island that are really doing, but you don't always hear about it.
No, sure.
That's the thing.
We don't shout about the positives here on the Isle of Wight. It's that's a given. We don't ever do it. And it's about time we did, because, like you say, you've got some fantastic people here. They're all doing fabulous things. And, you know, yes, there will be some people that will slip through the net. And I just think that's a sad thing when they're just given, here you go, I don't want to go on about 12 weeks off. And, you know, certain kids will abuse that and just say, well, I ain't going to do anything for 12 weeks then. And you know that will happen.
Yeah.
Maybe it should be a case of something comes in that says, right, you can't just do nothing. You either have to do X, Y or Z for the next 6 weeks. Then you can have 6 weeks off during that period of time. I'd like to see something like that in place because I think it's vital. And you just think if you had that in place now, we wouldn't have this problem of maybe we've not got enough people to do things that we're now advertising jobs for. That training could have been given. That could have been used. That 6 weeks could have been used for, you know, showing people how to do things and so on and building up to that. And that's experience. And that's experience that otherwise all these people, they're not going to get that. The experience is, I've just had 12 weeks off. Thanks.
We do have an annual careers fair.
Yeah.
Which is very well supported by employers, but also all the organisations on the island that do actually promote careers within schools. But I really don't want to get into this thing of blaming the pandemic. And a lot of stuff, the Careers Fair did actually go ahead online this year. But I think, let's be fair, we'll all be quite pleased when we can actually get to face-to-face and actually have some proper events. Going back to what you were saying earlier, though, in terms of setting parameters for ages and how long you can work, that's something that is actually being reviewed by government at the moment. And I think it's about striking that balance to enable our young people to get that experience early on. But obviously, with my safeguarding hat on, which is a very large part of my brief, we have to make sure that that is done in a way that doesn't actually impact on their education. Because at the end of the day, what we're trying to help those children to achieve is the best possible benefits that they can, and it's not all about the grades, but the best experience that they can possibly have from the education. And of course, the focus being very much at the moment on socialisation. Interestingly enough, the schools absolutely reacted magnificently to putting online courses together. Even before the government had actually talked about having a two-week sort of lesson plan, so you were always sort of 2 weeks of lesson plans ahead for online remote learning, a lot of the schools had already put that in place. They were really... It was absolutely astounding the way that they put that together. So I think, but we don't want to lose that. But one of the things that we've widely recognised is that it's the social aspects. A lot of those kids will have been learning from home on their own, and it's about coming back together. And it's almost having to, and I think it doesn't just apply to our children. I mean, it applies to some of the rest of us as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's about how we get back to being with our friends, socialising, not being sort of me first, and getting back into that. And I think schools are working really, really hard to actually factor in so that you mentioned, we're especially looking at things like in September, which almost sort of replicated what happened in March when the schools went back. The focus initially was very much on we're all in it together, like you said.
Yeah.
We're back together. Not so much the academic side. And it's interesting because the evidence that's coming through now is showing that it's not so much the academic side that has suffered, and all this talk of catch up is children are where they are, and the schools are really good with actually providing what's needed for those children at the point of where they are. So in terms of that, that's not so important. It's children's well-being and their health, especially their mental health, that is the focus at the moment.
Yeah, no, that's good, and I totally get that. And I think the schools have been absolutely awesome for the last 18 months and beyond, but even more so during this pandemic. I think they've been, don't want to get political, but I think they were let down with certain things, not being able to have the correct amount of time to put things in place. It was sometimes rushed, and someone had an idea, so you got to do it today. And I just think, no, hang on a minute. You've got to give these people a bit more respect and a bit more time to put things in place and so on, just to keep people safe. I'm glad there's going to be some kind of review on what you can do work-wise as a young person, because I think it's, what we've got at the moment is a lot of hypocrisy when it comes down to, we can go and watch England play and there's 45,000 people there, but I can't have somebody that 35 people at my wedding. Equally, and the right reason why I'm making that point is, you can send somebody on work experience for a week, but you can't go and work there. If they offered you a job on a Saturday, you can't go and work there until you're of a certain age and so on. And you just think, it's that kind of hypocrisy that we need to make clear and make sure that we, just put something in place that is proper and it befits the situation. Don't say you can't on this hand, but you can on this one. Because I get the ump, and so do other people do. Well, I can do work experience, but I can't work in that place and earn money. That, to me, is just completely daft. So I'm glad they're reviewing things. Hey, look, we've got about sort of 10 minutes left. And what I've done with, because we've had new leader Laura Pearcey Wilcox in, we had Jonathan Bacon in last week. And what I'm saying is to people is, you've got 4 years to look at what you're going to do. And I know that the first 3 months are going to be pretty hard because you're working out what you can do. You've got to see what you are going to do and how you're going to do it and so on. I know you said you hit the ground running, which is great. And I know there's lots of positivity coming out. But what's the plan for the next for the next 3-4 years? What needs changing? What are you going to change and so on?
OK, well, as I said, we've come a very, very long way. But we still there still is work to do. We very much want to give parents and students a choice. And at the moment, we're sort of in a cycle where, especially at secondary level, you have on the island a sort of school of choice, but it's cyclical. So 1 year, a couple of years, it might be one school, then it will go on to another. And one of the commitments that I have made and will make here and now is in raising the standards of all schools so that we break that cycle and we give parents genuine choice. And how we do that is we, going back to your earlier point, we actually value teachers as the professionals that they really are. And it's all about good leadership. It's both political leadership, but it's also strategic leadership from both council staff and from the heads and the senior leadership teams of the schools. But the other really crucial factor that I really would like to plug, if I may,
you carry on,
is about governing bodies of schools. I have, up until recently, been a governor on one of the federations of schools on the island. And it's an absolutely, it's a lot of work. It does take input, but it's so incredibly rewarding. And it's a way of really making a big difference by being on a governing body of a school to actually shape that policy to ensure that standards do improve. Now, what I'm going to be asking of officers very shortly is that we run a recruitment campaign to get more governors in. So it's something that, you know, I'm very passionate about. There are details on the Isle of Wight Council website if you just put in school governors and it will come up. But I'm more than happy to talk to anybody that wants more information about becoming a school governor. What it means is that there are people out there with many, many skills. And we one of the things that we actually did on our governing board was a skills audit, which lots of people will know because it's a very common tool that's used in business. And the broader range of skills that you have, the more effective that governing body will be. So I'd really, really like to see more people coming forward, you know, again, fresh ideas, fresh faces, but we need to be supporting our leadership in schools with strong governing bodies. And that's how we are going to raise those educational standards and do the best that we possibly can for our island children.
Okay, so if there's people out there that want to become a governor or want to find out more, they go to the website or they can get in contact with you?
Absolutely. iow.gov.uk, put in school governors and the details will come up there.
Are we short of governors?
We are always looking for governors. There's various different sort of types of governors, which I won't get into at this point, but one of the crucial ones is parent governors.
Right.
But you don't have to actually have a child necessarily at that school. If you've had a child that's been through education but has left the school, you can still put yourself forward as a parent governor.
Right.
But that's a really... And again, it comes back to us being a listening council. So we need to have that parent voice within our governing bodies.
Okay, so get in touch if you know, because this is something. I mean, you're going to come back at some point in the next little while.
I hope so.
Rome, your door's always open. Rome won't be built in a day. You know, we're just putting some ideas, some foundations down, maybe, and then we'll build on them, and then we'll put things into place. I'm sure, and that's the way it's going to work. And I say, is there anything else? Because we've got about 2-3 minutes left. Is there anything else you want to mention?
The other thing I have to mention mention is very quickly our COVID local support grants, which is the latest round is coming out. And one of the things I do is I actually sign off that decision very quickly so that funding can get out to providers. It's under Connect for Communities. It's a very simple application form. It's to enable us to provide community grants to organisations to help with them providing holiday activities for vulnerable households. We also work through the schools with the food vouchers program. Brilliant. So far we've helped over the 5 weeks of school holidays, we aim to help 48,171 children. That's our goal. So this is incredible. Serious stuff. It is done through schools, but we also have a community support grant. So look out for that. It's under, if you put in connect, the number 4, communities.org. As I say, it's a very simple application form. It's all done online. We have that funding. It comes directly from the DWP, and we want to give out that money.
No, good. Excellent. That is, because there's a lot of young people that are going to struggle this summer unless we've got things like that in place. If it's in place, they ain't going to struggle. It's not rocket science, is it? So that's fantastic. Because that was something similar in the news very recently about where, you know, people like Aspire and places got some funding.
Absolutely.
The funding that you've got, is that the same place?
It is.
I think
indeed.
Those people that have been filling in those forms and making that happen, I think that's brilliant, and I know how to fill in those forms, and I know how long it takes to do so, and so on. So I just think things like that are going to be so helpful.
Just to reassure you, though, I think they have actually simplified the form, because the point is, we want to get this money out.
Sure.
We want it to be where it's actually going to help not just those children, but those families, because we've got parents who are worrying about how they're actually going to feed themselves and their children. And we really do need
take that worry
to,
away.
To get it where it is and
brilliant.
To help those parents. So we have simplified the application form. So
okay. Look, it's been a pleasure to spend some time with you, find out what we're doing. And obviously, you know, we're going to have a chat in a minute. We're going to just going to go through so you know exactly what we're doing and how we can help you and vice versa and so on, because you know, there's an awful lot of kids. Take COVID out of the situation. There's an awful lot of kids out there that just need some assistance and pointing in the right direction. And hopefully, fingers crossed, you know, they can be the best that they can be and play their part in making the Isle of Wight a spectacular place to live. I mean, it's not rocket science at all. And as we've started with the slogan, we're in this together, and we are. And it don't matter what colour shirt you're wearing. I don't care what colour shirt you're wearing. I've got to be honest, we're in this together. We want to do the right thing, so that we can make this island the best it can possibly be. It's simple, as simple as that. So
absolutely.
Good luck for the next few
Thank
years.
You.
And hopefully, a couple of months' time, we'll get you back in and find out how it's all going.
I'd love to.
Okay.
Thank you.
Debbie Andre, we'll be back again next week. We've got Carl Love coming in. And I wonder if he likes being called Mr. Lover Man. Would he or not?
So you'll have to ask him that one.
We'll find out next week.